morning, church.
Oh, morning, person.
It is awesome to be here this morning. And it's awesome to be with family. And I said it a few times before, but I just want to reiterate that because my family's from Illinois, Amy's family's from Oregon, the reason that we can be here is because we have a wonderful church family. And we couldn't be here, we couldn't survive, we couldn't function without you. And I'm not just saying that because I'm your minister, I'm saying that as a member of this body and as your brother. So I thank you so much for that, for your encouragement, for your love, for just everything you are. And it's awesome to be part of it. So that's... I'm excited. I'm always excited, but I'm excited. I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry, you know? I do want to encourage you once again. I know I talked about it, but I do want to encourage you to come to the teaching workshop next week. This sermon a little bit of a preface for that, but it's also an idea that I have been dwelling on I started up in Oregon. My father-in-law, who's also a preacher, we were talking about his congregation and they're small. They're about 25 on Sunday mornings. They minister in a town of Springfield, the size of Rapid City, only Church of Christ, and there's Eugene, only one other Church of Christ in there. And just trying to think of things and purpose and whys and all these things came up, but I've been dwelling on this for a while. And it's come up especially because as many of us who have had kids, and maybe even not many of us who've had kids, but a lot of us know that kids, particularly toddlers, about 3, 4, about Mitchell's age, go through the dreaded why phase. Please do this. Why? Tie your shoes. Why? Eat dinner. Why? All these things. Why do I have to go to school? Why do I have to go to bed? Why do I have to brush my teeth? Why do I have to put on my shirt? Why do I have to be clothed? You know, all these things which, you know, go through the mind of a 3 or 4 year old. And it's interesting because among a lot of parents, it's a dreaded phase. Because it's incessant. It's always. It's all the time. Every little decision, every little thing. We need to leave now. Why? Because church is going to start in 15 minutes. Why? Because that's the time they set. Why? I don't know! Why? It's a fun phase. I've actually had a lot of fun with Mitchell's, and Matthew's not quite there yet. But I don't dread it. I mean, obviously there are times as a parent where you kind of have to say nicely, hopefully, all right, we're done talking about this right now. We need to go. But no, we just need to go. We try not, Amy and I try not to do the whole because I said so thing. Sometimes it's come out not quite in that word. Sometimes it's come out, I don't know, leave me alone. But, you know, that's... But we try to answer. And not because we want to just indulge them, not because we just have all the time in the world, not because we have all the patience in the world, but because we, Amy and I, genuinely want our kids to think. And we try to give them answers that are not just directly answering their questions. We try to give them answers which make him think about the larger picture, about his larger world, about his larger responsibility, about the world in which he fits. And sometimes we do, as parenting goes, sometimes we do better than others. But the funny thing is that, and I've noticed this in my own life, eventually a lot of people stop asking why. And they get more involved in the what. For example, at parties or oftentimes at church, you walk in somewhere, you know, new. What is one of the first things you ask another adult whenever you get to know them? What do you do? Where do you live? We get involved in the what. Has anyone ever been asked in getting to know you a why question? As in, why do you do this as opposed to that? It's something what I want to consider this morning. I want to consider it because oftentimes in the church,
And I'm guilty of this in the 3 years I've been here. Oftentimes in the church, we get so caught up in what? That either we neglect, forget, or run over our why. Now, what do I mean by that? Has anyone ever asked you, what do you do at church? What do you answer? Well, we sing, we pray, we do communion, we hear a sermon, you know, all that. We might get asked another kind of what question, where do you attend church? Well, Northern Church of Christ. Someone asks, well, what about that congregation? How many of us would be ready with an answer about why do you do what you do on Sunday morning? Why do you go to Northern Hills Church of Christ? Are you ready with an answer about why are you a Christian? I want to consider this because this is important. Too often, if we get caught up in our what's, we lose why. And we get busy with the what's. But the thing is, church, if we can define our why, our what's come into focus. Our what's are defined. Our what's are chosen for us. And oftentimes we have a lot more options than our what's if we know our why. I'm getting ahead of myself just for a minute. I want to look at three examples this morning. And this is a topical sermon. Carl's going to come preach and teach next week, so I'm going to wait until the next Sunday after the last Sunday to start our theme series for the year. But I think this is a good thing to start out with this year, too. Last week was encouragement. This Sunday is why. I want to start out with something. Consider ancient Israel. Now, that's actually modern Israel. Ancient Israel, that's a model near Jerusalem, which is 1/50th the scale. It's a really neat thing. I want to consider ancient Jerusalem for a second. A lot of us in here have a lot of Old Testament knowledge. A lot of us in here know a lot about history. A lot of us in here have studied ancient Israel. I've preached on them quite often. I try to mention them quite often because, obviously, you know, the whole Bible is important. If I were to ask you, what did they do? A lot of us might be able to answer that. Well, they had kings, they had Solomon, they worshipped God in their sacrifices, they built the tabernacle, they built the temple, they didn't do a lot of what God wanted. How many of us in here would be able to answer, why did Israel do what they did? Or maybe a better question, what was God's why for Israel? Whatever comes to mind, I want to think about some of the things that come to my mind. Well, what was Israel's why? Well, we might be tempted to say it was to perform sacrifices. The priestly duty, the tabernacle, the temple. That's a good what, but the thing is, it's not a why, because if all you do, if all you're about is the sacrifice, once you come and do the sacrifice, then you're free to live the rest of your life however you want, which actually is kind of what happened. They started relegating God only to the temple. They said, that's where I do what I do to worship God, and the rest of the time I'm going to be idolatrous, I'm going to not take care of the sick and poor, I'm going to worship this. Isaiah 44 talks about how they cut down a tree, used half of it for an idol, the other half for firewood, and Isaiah goes, what are you doing? That's a what? Some might say that it was to be a light for the nations. That was their why. I would argue that's still a what, because that's a result of something. In order to be a light for the nations, but that's an end to itself, you only have to be a light, you only have to be good, you only have to be whatever you want to be whenever there are other nations around. That's not the why. Maybe it was to worship God. That's a good what, but that's still the sacrifices thing. What was Israel's why? You ever thought about it? Anyone ever read Leviticus lately? That's a joke, because it's Leviticus. If you were to read Leviticus, here's my thought on Israel's why. It's in Leviticus 11, verse 45, and it's actually one that you're familiar with, though you don't know it. It's one which I think permeates, and this is what a why is. It permeates every aspect of life so that no matter what you're doing, no matter who you're with, no matter where you are, you have this to draw from. Personally, I think Israel's why can be devoted to this. Israel, in Leviticus 11:45, God tells him, I am the Lord who brought you out of Egypt to be your God. Therefore, be holy, because I am holy. If holiness is your wife, to be holy because God is holy, that influences everything. That influences your family. That influences who you're around. That influences how you act when you're somewhere else. That influences everything. That influences your marriage. That influences your food. That influences everything. And you can say, why are you doing this? Why are you sacrificing? Why are you being a light? Why are you worshiping God? The why for ancient Israel was to be holy as God is holy. You see that distinction? Now they messed up. Most of the Old Testament is about how they weren't. But yet, that's another sermon. Israel's why was always intended to be holy as God is holy. And if they would have always come back to that, instead of getting caught up in the what, we could have had a lot different history. Well, that's ancient Israel, you might say. They're, you know, we can learn from them, but that doesn't necessarily impact me today. Well, how about Jesus' why? Ever thought about actually... Oh, well. Ever thought actually about Jesus' why? What are some answers you may think of? Well, it might be to forgive sins. I think there's something a little bit bigger than that. That was a result of something. Still, that was the result of his ministry, the result of his life, what we have access to. It might be to worship God. Yeah, that's still kind of the same way as Israel. It might be to go to the cross. That's still something he's going towards. That doesn't define why he went. Perform miracles, still the same issue. Still doesn't show us why he was doing what he did. I'm trying to do this because I want you to see the distinction between what's and why's. What was Jesus' why? There could probably be a few answers to this. But as the scripture reading has gone, I think it's a good one from John 17. In John 17, and I invite you there if you're open, if you're not. In John 17, he prays to God, and he prays on behalf of himself. He prays on behalf of his apostles. He prays on behalf of the church. He prays on behalf of everybody who would eventually hear about him through everyone else. It's a wonderful prayer. He prays for unity. He prays for steadfastness. He prays all these things. And he ends it, I think, with a wonderful why statement of Jesus. And once again, a why statement has to define everything else that he does and why he does everything else that he does. At the end of John 17, Jim read it, Jordan referred to it, but did you catch it? It says, O righteous Father, even though the world does not know you, I know you, and these know that you have sent me. I made known to them your name, and I will continue to make it known. Here we go, there it is. I will continue to make it known that the love with which you have loved me may be in them and I in them. What was Jesus' why on earth? Why did he come? Why did he want to forgive sins? Why did he go to the cross? Why did he come in the way that he did? John says, it's to show God by putting his love in everyone that he comes in contact with. If you think of it that way, he went and perform miracles to show God that they may see his mercy so that way they may have God's love. He wants to forgive sins so that he can show God's merciful character and love. He went to the cross out of that love, says John 3:16. You see the difference between the what's and the why. They're good what's, obviously. We need the what's. We need the cross. We need forgiveness. But Jesus' why was to show God and put God's love in the people. The neat thing about this is that if this is Jesus' why, it helped him with every encounter that he had. Imagine if the what had only been the thing he was concerned about when it came to the to the woman caught in adultery. By focusing on the what, he could have said, you need forgiveness. He could have said, you've messed up. You've sinned. True. That is why. To show God and put his love in the people. told Jesus to respond with, "Does no one condemn you? I don't either. Don't do it again." Showing God's mercy and showing and putting in her heart, instead of condemnation, forgiveness. Instead of sin, love. How would it have gone differently with the Samaritan woman at the well? You remember the Samaritan woman, she's drawing water in the middle of the day because she has 5 husbands, comes and meets Jesus, and he calls her out on it. He asks, "Where is your husband?" She goes, "I have no husband." And he goes, "You're right, because you have 5. And the woman goes, "I perceive you are a prophet." Do you remember what then she says? She challenges him. He's kind of caught her in a little quandary. She challenges Jesus. "I perceive you are a prophet. Our fathers say that on this mount, not in Jerusalem, do you worship. But your fathers say Jerusalem." Which one is right? If Jesus were only concerned about the what, he could have said, "It's Jerusalem. You're wrong." He could have said, "You need to get your theology right." He could have said, "Why are you asking me about theology when you're clearly in sin with 5 husbands?" Instead, showing God and putting God's love into people had him respond, instead of condemnation once again, instead of a challenge back, to include her in the way that she needed. He admitted, if you go to John 4, I'll read it for you, just because it's better to read it rather than me say it. He says, "Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews. But the hour is coming," he says, "and is now here, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For the Father is seeking such people to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth." You see, Jesus, instead of responding in kind, responded with, "Yeah, salvation is from the Jews, but God wants all true worshipers to come worship him." That was what she needed. Not another challenge, not a theological argument, not a condemnation, not a reminder of the sin in which she's been living in, but an invitation to become a true worshiper of God in spirit and in truth. Because Jesus was about showing God's love and showing who the Father is. You see that difference? Let's look at one more. Whenever you think of the New Testament, far be it for you to think of someone else besides... If you're not going to think of Jesus, you're probably going to think of Paul. I invite you open to Ephesians 3 if you would like. If not, that's all right. Paul, as we know, was a Pharisee of Pharisees. A zealous Pharisee of Pharisees that held the coats of the people that were stoning Stephen for speaking the truth. In the next chapter in Acts 8, he is getting letters from the authorities to go and break down Christians' doors and drag them into jail. This man knows what his whats are. "I'm a Pharisee, I am sinless, I am blameless, I keep the law, I'm going to persecute these blaspheming Christians." Then on the road to Damascus, he had a little change of heart. Via blinding light, and Jesus saying, "Why do you persecute me?" And after 3 days of blindness, learning the truth about who Jesus was. From then on, Paul was just as zealous, but for Christ, instead of against. And in Acts 22 and 24 and 26, Paul says, "You know what, when I was persecuting Christians, I didn't feel a thing. I was right, I thought I was justified, I had no conscience problems whatsoever, until I learned the truth." This is a convicted man. What was Paul's why? I think we find it here in Ephesians 3. Verse 8, which says, "To me, though I am the very least of all the saints, this grace was given to preach to the Gentiles the unsearchable riches of Christ and to bring to light for everyone what is the plan of the mystery hidden for the ages in God who created all things, so that through the church the manifold wisdom of God might be made known to the rulers and authorities in the heavenly places." What's his why? To preach to the Gentiles so that the wisdom of God may be made known. That's a good why. This is what allowed him to preach to the Greeks on the Areopagus. in Acts 17, where in the midst of paganism, in the midst of all these idols and false gods, he's able to walk in there, see an idol to an unknown God, and say, I see you're very religious. How many of us in the middle of something like that would go, you bunch of heathens? How many other people throughout history? But instead, because Paul is preaching to the Gentiles and his purpose is to make known the wisdom of God, he says, I see you're very religious. In fact, you're so religious, you have a thing to an unknown God. Let me tell you about that unknown God. He's the one who has made the heavens and the earth. He's the one who is in control of all things. He's the one you need to know. And it says at the end of the chapter that some Greeks followed him, some Greeks laughed at him. But he preached to the Gentiles and made known the wisdom of God. This is what allowed Paul to travel everywhere. We get into this situation as Christians. What do I do? 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 Do I make the right choice or not? If you know your why, you don't struggle with that as much. Because if your why is to preach to the Gentiles and make known the wisdom of God, where haven't I been? How about here? Okay. You have a lot of options. Decision-making becomes a lot easier. It's what let Paul preach joy when he was imprisoned, because he was still able to preach to the Gentiles and make known the wisdom of God. Even though he was in prison, he could still fulfill his why, even though his what was a little undesirable. I hope you're getting the picture. I hope you're seeing the difference between why and what. You see, what defining your why does clarifies your purpose, as I said. Instead of just, I come to church and I sing and I pray and I commune and listen, what if you had a different why at church? What if your why was to encourage? Then your worship, your singing, your praying, your communing, your talking with people looks different. What if it's to find someone that day to pray for and pray specifically for, as we talked about in class? What if it's preach and teach? My purpose on Sunday morning is a little bit different than yours. And that's good. That's okay. It clarifies your purpose. It also defines your what. Sometimes the defining means that it actually opens up options. If your only purpose on Sunday morning is to come and get something, get good singing, get good prayers, get communion, get a lesson, versus what if you came here to give someone encouragement, give someone love, give someone an opportunity to be holy. Your what's not only are defined, but they're opened up, aren't they? There's a lot more ways you can do encouragement than you can simply come and take. It also answers how. And sometimes it answers how by saying the how doesn't matter. If your purpose, if you're an evangelist, you're gifted with evangelism, and you read Matthew 28 that says, go into all the world as you're going and make disciples. People go, God, do I move here? Do I move here? How do I know which one to do? If you know your why is to preach and evangelize, the answer becomes either one. If your purpose is to encourage on Sunday morning, it doesn't matter how good the sermon or singing or prayer, your purpose, you can fulfill it by saying, how do I do this? I wait for an opportunity. I pay attention. I give encouragement. I pray for someone. I wink at someone. I shake someone's hand. Give someone a big hug. You see how your how becomes a little bit less important. But yet, we agonize over the hows, don't we? In thinking of this, there's a video I came across. Anyone ever listened to the comedian Michael Jr.? He's a comedian, and I found him just the other week. And when I'm traveling, when I'm on the road, I tend to listen to YouTube videos. I try to pull up sermons or lessons or scholars. Every so often, I'll pull up TED Talks about, you know, just randomly stuff. I mean, Brian, we could probably have a good conversation on what to listen to. Podcasts. I came across Michael Jr. He's a comedian, very strong Christian. And lo and behold, beginning of this week, when I was really starting to ruminate on this lesson, I came across this video. It illustrates once more, and I think this will, if you're a little confused about anything, and even if you're not, I think this will illustrate this concept even that much more. Michael Jr.
How do I know? A lot of people, when they think of the phrase, how do I know, they always want to put the what behind it. How do I know what I'm supposed to do? The question that you really should ask is, how do I know why I'm here? Because when you know your why, your what becomes more clear and more impactful. If you know, like for instance, people know that I do comedy, but that's what I do. My why is to inspire people to walk in purpose. So I can do comedy, I can write books, I can be in a movie, because all of it is motivated by my why. In fact, I have a new web series out called Michael Jr. Break Time. We probably just did the 6th episode. It's on YouTube. So every single Wednesday at 3 o'clock, we drop a new episode on YouTube of Michael Jr. Break Time. What it is it's me. I travel around the country, and I do stand-up comedy, in case you didn't know. And in the middle of my comedy set sometime, I'll stop and just talk to my audience. And we've been filming this, and it's pretty cool. So we're in Winston-Salem. I'm going to show you a clip from Winston-Salem. And I'm just talking to this guy in the audience, and he tells me that he's a musical instructor at a school. So I was like, all right, you're a musical instructor. You know, can you sing? Let me hear you sing a song. So this is what happened at the last episode of Michael Jr.'s Break Time. Check it. So you're a musical director.
Cool. Yes, sir.
All right, so let me get a couple bars of like Amazing Grace. Can you do the first part of that? Go ahead.
Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
Wow. That bro could sing. You know what I'm saying?
All right. Now, once you give me the version, is it, your uncle just got out of jail. You got shot in the back when you was a kid. I'm just saying, let me see the hood version real quick. If you need to know which version I'm talking about, just see if that exists. Let me see what you got.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me.
Here's what I want you to catch. The first time I asked him to sing, he knew what he was doing. The second time, he knew why he was doing it. When you know your why, your what becomes more impactful because you're walking towards or in your purpose.
So to get started with that, Jenna. Church, I want to ask you that question. What is your why? Now, I don't just mean here. I mean, what is your why in your own life? Why do you get up every morning? Why do you do or not do what you do or do not do? What is your why for your family? What is your family's goal? What is your family's aim? What are you striving towards as a family? And indeed, this does impact, why are we here? Why are you here this morning? Why are you a Christian? This is where the variety and the blessed, amazing variety of the church comes into it. Want to know one of my whys? I was thinking on this and I realized I hadn't done this in my own life. I finally decided sometime this week that my why is to teach people about the God that I love. I'm gifted in teaching, at least I think I am. You guys agreed at least 3 years ago, so, you know, some of you did. And the thing is, that impacts everything I do. Because I don't just teach up here. I teach when I try to parent my kids. I teach when I have a good marriage with my wife. I teach whenever I interact with people. I teach whenever I'm out in the world and someone needs help. Teaching is not just sitting up here and telling you something. Teaching defines a way of life. I don't tell you that to say, look at me, but just for an example. What I do then doesn't matter as much. If I wasn't a full-time minister, I'd still preach. But I can always teach about the God that I love. What is your why? What is your why? Here's the thing, church. Don't just ask this question because I asked you. Never do that. Ask this question because Jesus knew his why. Ask this question because those who made the greatest impact in Scripture knew their why. And the people who made the greatest negative impact in Scripture obviously lost their why. I invite you today to decide, what is your why? Why are you here? And we ask that question, why did God create me? Well, what if you actually got to decide a little bit? Based on your gifts, based on where you are, based on who you know. What if finding your why wasn't so much waiting for someone to tell you, but simply being aware and realizing who God has already made you? What is your why? I'm going to keep teaching about the God that I love. I don't know how to do anything else. But I do know that I love it when we come together. And I get to do this. And I get to be encouraged by you. And I get to go on this journey of learning all about the God that we serve and who we are together. And I also love when you stand and sing.